This week we're talking about the microbial world and how it can help to keep us fit and fed.
Indeed. And in Western countries, the average person eats their own weight in meat every year, which means that livestock rearing makes a significant contribution to greenhouse gas emissions. This is partly because ruminant animals like cows release methane, which is produced by the bacteria growing in their digestive tracts. Aberystwyth University scientist Jamie Newbold has found that changes to farming practices, though, can alter the microbes inside animals, and that makes the animals much more efficient at growing and also much less environmentally unfriendly.
So the challenge we have is, as everybody knows, there's going to be 9 billion people by 2050, and we've got to find ways of feeding them. In many levels, that will be about better crop production, but we also have to remember that a lot of the land in the world is only suitable for growing grass. So in the UK, for instance, about 60% of our land is grassland. On a global level, it's maybe about 35-37%. So we've got to find ways of converting that into human edible food. And of course, the way to do that is to use herbivores, and particularly ruminants, cattle, sheep, goats, to convert things that aren't edible by us into things that are edible by us in the form of meat and milk.
Good news for people who like meat, like me. Less good news for vegetarians, perhaps. But what is the downside of doing that? Because it sounds like there's plenty of land, we just have more cows and sheep and goats.
I don't think I'm necessarily talking about more sheep and goats. We're talking about restructuring so that we don't compete with humans for human edible feed. When you feed cattle things that you and I can eat, they're relatively inefficient. Less than 65% of the energy transfers in to the meat. However, when we feed cattle, grass, things that we can't eat, the actual increase in the human edible protein is about 700%. So it's changing the way we use ruminant livestock, so they use food that we can't. Now, the challenge is in doing that are to make sure it's efficient and to make sure we minimise the environmental damage associated with cattle and sheep.
There are two challenges there. Let's take the first one first, the efficiency. From what you've just said, though, it sounds like ruminant animals are already extremely efficient. So how can we improve on that?
Well, the rumen's a fascinating environment. To take the dairy cow, for instance, you've got a rumen there that's about 100 litres bigger. That's the size of a domestic dustbin, full of microbes, all actively degrading the food. What we need to do is make sure that that degradation is the most efficient so that we get the best transfer of the nutrients that are in the grass through the microbes and then into the animal.
And in order to make that process more efficient, we've got to tweak the microbes.
Or we can tweak the forage. So what our own research is doing is trying to understand how the microbes interact with the forage so that we can advise farmers on planting the right grass that then is fermented the most efficiently in the rumen, and ultimately trying to balance the forage with the microbes and, of course, with the host, because the other thing we know is that the animal itself has a large degree of control on the microbial population in the gut.
This is the sort of prebiotic effect, isn't it? It's in the same way that people say if you eat a lot of porridge, you have beta-glucans in your diet, and this promotes the growth of healthy or so-called good bacteria in your intestine. You're talking about doing a similar sort of thing with what you feed into your ruminant animals.
It's a very similar concept. It's about maximising the output and, of course, as I said before, minimising the environmental issues.
Well, since you've raised that, what about the fact that the microbes in cows at the moment are extremely bad for the world because they pump out huge amounts of methane? Can we do anything about that?
Oh, I think we can. I think it's probably the first point to make. It's important to remember that it's this microbial population that produces the methane. And we can do a lot to reduce that. So, for instance, we have worked using new grass varieties that when we feed them to the animals grow quicker and we have 25% less methane. Colleagues in New Zealand are working on vaccines, that you can vaccinate the animal so you destroy the methanogenic archaea in the rumen and the animal produces less methane. And then most excitingly of all, there seems to be now good evidence that methane production by ruminants is actually a heritable trait. And just in the same way that we breed for high milk production, we can probably breed for animals that produce less methane. So I think we have nutritional, we have vaccination, and we inevitably have genetic methods.
Just to return to the point you were making about getting rid of the methanogens, the bacteria that make the methane in the guts of the animals, is one not necessary to have the other, in the sense that it's interesting how this is such a ubiquitous trait in these animals? They produce huge amounts of methane. Is it not necessary for them to grow as efficiently as they do, to taste as tasty as they do when you send them to the abattoir and then turn them into a burger? Are we not going to end up, if we lose those microbes, with a less efficient animal in the long run?
Now, you might have thought that would be so, but there have been proof-of-concept studies done where we've used chloroform, and chloroform is a direct analogue of methane. And although chloroform clearly is not a practical feed additive, when you add chloroform to the rumen, you switch off methane production. And us and others have done trials now showing that when you do that, you can raise methane-free animals, and they grow perfectly well, and the products you get out are the same. So, surprisingly, it seems this is an avoidable problem.
Well, let's put some numbers on this then. So what sort of impact do you think that this sort of work could have on the amount of energy that we can supply the human race with? Are we looking at a food sustainability problem if we implement this still? And also, what about the environmental impact? What sort of a dent in methane and therefore indirectly carbon equivalents can we make with this?
Okay, so to try and break that down, food security, let's be clear, this is only part of the problem. We need, as everybody knows, to reduce the amount of red meat that rich Western diets contain. So I'm not advocating a high meat diet. I'm advocating red meat as part of a balanced diet. So it's only part of the solution to food security. Environmentally, just give you some ballpark figures. The average dairy cow produces about 30 litres of methane for every kilogram of dry matter it eats. Our estimates suggest that if we get farmers to manage their animals better, then if the worst farmers farmed as well as the middle farmers, we might have a 15 to 20% reduction. If everybody farmed as well as the best farmers, there might be another 10%. So a lot we can do just by advising farmers. In terms of additives, there is no magic bullet on the horizon, but there are certainly plenty of solutions that will make further reductions in the region of 20 to 25%. So we can make a real difference to the impact of the greenhouse gases from ruminants.
Jamie Newbold from Aberystwyth University.